you're listening to Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson dig deeply. We probe the movies that affect us in some way, positive or negative. Be warned, there are spoilers coming. So sit back, get comfortable as we dig in and probe the movies, but not in a creepy way. So, welcome. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight, after a little bit of housekeeping, we're going to talk about the 1999 film Ghost Dog: The Way of the Samurai.
That was my pick on the fly, because last time I had a chance to pick, we ended up doing that as a group podcast. It's Sneakers.
So were you bitter? Is that what you're saying?
No. I was actually patting myself on the back for choosing such a good movie off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Although, let me just warn you, when I found this on the Netflix queue, because it was Netflix streaming, available now, I had given it 1 star.
Wow.
After seeing it the first time. Yeah, at the I saw it with your mom, I remember. However, upon rewatching it, I have adjusted my opinion, but we'll get there when we get there.
That's really funny, because you seemed really excited when I mentioned it.
Oh, I was. I am. Yeah. No, I was either way, really.
Were you anticipating on hate watching it?
Not necessarily, but I wanted to find, since obviously you picked it, so you found that it had some sort of value, I thought, well, this will give me the opportunity to watch it again with that in mind. Because when I first watched this movie, I was like, what the fuck is this? But anyway, we will get there.
Yeah, I actually just finished listening to your podcast with Jason when you were talking about Contact.
And what did you think?
The podcast was quite enjoyable. Contact, I don't really have any strong feelings about Contact. I thought it was fine. Didn't think it was great. Didn't think it was bad. But what jumped out at me from the podcast was when you were talking to Jason about the computer game that I think you called Psycho.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about, but it was called Postal. Does that sound right?
Yes, that's exactly what it's called, Postal.
I bet that's still at our parents' house.
Oh, if we could only find that.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure they've got it. But yeah, that was a really dark, dark computer game. And the post office got really mad, because that was one of the first uses of going postal in that vernacular.
Oh yeah, they were not happy at all.
Yeah.
And now it's just a way, it's just what you call it.
Nobody even thinks twice about the term. Another thing I had on my list, it's been a while since we've gotten the chance to chat, but I really had a good time listening to the Sneakers episode, because it reminded me of just how silly the three of us get when we're all in a room together. But my favorite part about that is the only clip that you edited into that podcast was actually not from Sneakers, but from Rubicon.
Oh, yeah, because I don't have the movie Sneakers. I actually had recorded, I DVR'd it off of some movie channel, IFC or something. And So I couldn't just use the file I was watching on the computer to just rip the audio from.
That's funny.
Yeah, so it was the only one I could really find. I mean, I guess I could have tried to YouTube it and rip the audio from there, but I didn't have that kind of, motivation. But I like that speech from Rubicon.
Oh, I love it. That's one of my favorites. And just, it made me so happy that I actually found someone else who watched Rubicon.
Oh.
I thought that John Frame were the only persons ever
who
had watched it and enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, actually, our mom turned me on to it, because you must have said something to her about it. So I think we watched the entire series over the course of several months.
Yeah, one of my go-to lines when people ask me how I know something or how I figured out something and I don't actually want to go into it, I say, I see patterns like Will Travers. And no one actually gets it, but it's a good conversation ender.
Excellent. I'll have to try it out, although, again, I probably couldn't pull it off.
Yeah, I think I'm going to rewatch that show. It was so great.
It was. It was fantastic. And what a great premise for a show, and then to be able to pull it off is fantastic. I mean, I'm happy just for that one season.
Yeah, absolutely. That was on, I think, at the same time as Terriers, the other show I mentioned during the Sneakers podcast, which I have to implore you to watch. Terriers is definitely one of my favorite shows, but those two were both really distressing for me because separately, maybe at the same time, Dish Network was having a dispute with a few of the cable channels, and we actually lost those channels like 4 episodes into the seasons for those two shows.
Oh, that's horrible.
It was. So I had to go back. Actually, I never did get to go back and catch up on Terriers, but I think AMC ran Rubicon Marathon once they got a deal back with Dish Network.
That's how we must have seen it, because I know we didn't. Well, I don't know. Somehow, yeah, maybe it was a marathon that our mama taped. Yeah, I just remembered really, really liking it.
I'm gonna watch it again. Have you seen a show called The Americans?
No.
It's on FX. It's a spy show. It's really great. It's probably one of the best on TV right now. It's set in the 80s, so it's a period piece. And the premise is it's this married couple who have 2 kids, and they are actually communist Soviet sleeper spies. So they're living as Americans, but they're doing spy stuff for the Soviet Union.
And you know about this ahead of time. I mean, this is everything you know from the beginning.
Oh yeah, no, it's not a surprise. It really is an interesting sort of emotional conundrum, because they're the protagonists of the show, and you're rooting for them. Like, you don't want to see them get caught, but at the same time, they're working against the American government. So it's kind of a weird dichotomy, but it's done so well that you just kind of go along for the ride. I recommend that show too.
Awesome, I'll have to check it out.
And while we're wrapping up talking about TV, I think I mentioned before that Jennifer and I were watching the second season of Hannibal. Since then, we've finished it, and it was great. I think it was the podcast you and Jason were talking about, the another podcast called Books and Nachos.
Yes.
Yeah, I was aware of that one. I do listen to it now playing every once in a while when they do a movie or a series that I'm interested in. So I was aware that one of those guys did the Books and Nachos. But since you and Jason actually talked about it and you recommended it, I checked it out. And because I just finished Hannibal, I listened to the episode he did about Red Dragon.
I haven't heard that one.
It's good. I've read the book a long, long time ago, so it was good to sort of reorient myself, but it really cemented in my mind that the most interesting part of the Thomas Harris universe is really the Will Graham dynamic. The Clarice thing was always she was always really overshadowed by the charisma of, Anthony Hopkins Hannibal. But the Will Graham character is really, it's a brilliant character and such a good mirror of Hannibal. And the TV show really, really picks up on that dynamic and exploits it to a tremendously entertaining end.
Did you read the book Hannibal?
No, I've only read Red Dragon and Silence of the Lambs.
Okay, well, you're better off than I am, because I read Hannibal when it first came out, because I was so much a fan of Manhunter, and then Silence of the Lambs, and then I went back and read Red Dragon after that, I think. And Hannibal, you could tell that he went off to Italy and he likes food, because the whole thing is about food and Italy, and to a very annoying extent.
Well, I mean, it makes sense that a book solely about Hannibal would be so much about food.
Yeah, but it's just, it gets so old. And there's some good parts to that I mean, like Mason Verger and those, the characters in the book are pretty great. I'm probably saying his last name wrong, but yeah, I mean, it's got all the elements there. It just lingers over like food and maybe perfumes too. He talks about just stuff that I didn't need. It made it a very long book.
Okay. So Mason Verger was in the, was in the book then.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Everything is still there. But it's, I don't know. Is Mason Verger, does he show up in the Hannibal TV series?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, the TV series is set at a time when Hannibal is still seeing patients.
And Mason Verger was one of his patients.
As it turns out. But that one really snuck up on me. So the TV show did a good job.
Excellent.
Like, maybe it'll jump out at you more quickly because you're more familiar with the story in the book. But
well, and since we just talked about it, I'm sure it'll jump up a little more quickly. But yeah, normally you don't have to go far to obscure things for me to miss them completely normally, sadly. At least the first time I watch something. We'll see. Ghost Dog eluded me the first time I watched it, not knowing nearly as much as I know now about other things, I think.
Yeah, let's jump into Ghost Dog.
Okay.
Unless you have any other housekeeping, I think that's all I had on my list.
Nope, not really. Yeah, so I guess Ghost Dog forced me to do a couple things. I didn't have it on video, so I watched it streaming, which is good for one reason, but like, you know, I said, not great because I don't like being like tied to the streaming, but it worked out fine. Like I said, I had given this thing 1 star, and I remember exactly the point where it just, to me, it was like, okay, we're done. This isn't great. The first thing was, I'm a little shallow when it comes to my main characters, I guess, my actors, because Forrest Whitaker is a great actor, but the thing with his left eye, I believe it's called atosis, it kind of, I guess sometimes I think it's a character choice rather than just his actual, just how he is. Because I got the sense early on that because he didn't talk a lot and he had Mr. Droopy Face, that the Ghost Dog character may be slightly developmentally disabled. That was not the case, as it turns out.
No.
Not at all. Not at all. I was unfair.
And I know you haven't seen it, but Forrest Whitaker was one of the greatest television antagonists on The Shield. His character arc on The Shield is brilliant.
I can't think of a Forrest Whitaker movie, again, before last week, with the exception of this movie, that I don't think I've seen anything that he's done that I hadn't liked. He's a heck of an actor.
Indeed.
Anyway, this movie, though, it inspired me to watch another movie. And that's, which I'd never seen before, and that's Rashomon. Because I'd heard Rashomon be mentioned a lot. And I could kind of guess what they were getting to, but I had never actually seen it before. So I went back and saw it. And I was glad that I did. I mean, it's not going to be ever on my list of judgment, but it's worthy of seeing. I assume you've seen it because it's a Kurosawa film?
Yeah. I think that's an important film to watch because of the structure that it provided that so many other films have copied or paid homage to. That's the earliest one that I know of that sort of did the retelling of the story from different perspectives.
Yeah, and it, like I said, it's well worth watching. It's got some goofy acting in it, but I think that's just some of
very goofy,
Japanese cinema at the time, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what else? What other homework did this inspire in me?
Did it make you want to go back watch Steven Seagal's very first movie about the law?
No, although, I'm always... Is that because of Henry Silva?
Yes.
Yeah, I love Henry Silva.
He was so bizarrely great in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. I have notes about his performance in this because he, you know, again, he's not, we'll get to it. So, if you were to describe this movie, what is this movie? What kind of movie are we getting into here?
It's funny. This movie wasn't quite the way I remembered it. It's been a while since I've seen it. I watched it for the first time right after it came out on video. And it had to have been right before I came back up to Alaska after college, because I remember watching it down in Missouri, watching it with my then girlfriend, now wife. And I loved it back then because it was so goofy, and my memory of it was a little bit more slapsticky. And my girlfriend, she hated it. She was really annoyed that I made her watch it, and she's even more annoyed that I liked it so much. So it's always been in the back of my mind to revisit it, but this is the first opportunity that I've had to do it. And upon rewatch, maybe I'm just more mature, but it's really a much more contemplative film than I remember. It's a film that I admire for the way that it takes its time. You know, it certainly doesn't take itself very seriously, but at the same time, I think appreciates the gravity of the situation and doesn't try and rush anything.
Let's see. I agree. I think the going into it, again, I wanted to watch it with a different mindset. And I think I know why, because this movie actually offended me when I first saw it. That's why I gave it a bad, or 1 star, and why I was just disgusted. Because I thought I was getting into one kind of movie, and it turned into a whole different kind of movie, and I was just not prepared for that. Because when the movie starts out, you're introduced to Ghost Dog, okay, who is Forrest Whitaker, and he is always reading from the Hagakure. Is that, am I getting it almost right? It's this.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay, it's this book about the way of the samurai, and he's living his life based on these on the idea that he is now a samurai, and he's the retainer for this guy named Louis, who is a local mobster who had saved his life. So now this guy has saved his life, so he's now the retainer for this guy. And he also is a hitman for the Italian mafia in the neighborhood in which he lives. It's not the only gang in the neighborhood, though, because he seems to get along with the Crips and the Bloods pretty much equally. They make a show of that. And he just sort of goes about his day, and he doesn't talk very much. I read some stuff from Forrest Whitaker about, but he considers this one of his better roles because it gave him an opportunity to act in silence, because he doesn't say a lot. So we've got this character, and again, when I'm watching this the first time, we got this character who he keeps quoting from this book that gives all sorts of how to live like a samurai, including the helpful advice to live as if you were already dead. That's a big part of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a very, very, like, monastic existence. He lives on top of this building in this shack that also has a pigeon coop, and he raises pigeons or whatever. And so you have basically him and his book and his pigeons. And otherwise, he really is a ghost through this city in which he lives. So that's about the first, right, like, 3 minutes of the movie, right? But then...
That's the entire movie.
Well, no, but I mean, that gives you his character, right, in the first couple minutes?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, okay, you know, I mean, maybe, I know I was a younger guy, and I can imagine, you know, living by a strict code, although I'm sure I could, don't have the, I guess will is the wrong word, but... the tenacity to get myself down to a monastic existence. It just wouldn't happen. But so he's living by this code, and it's, so it's, and it's, he's very internal. In fact, the first part of this movie, to me, was very reminiscent of Collateral, except they used rap instead of jazz. Because you kind of follow through this neighborhood in which he lives, and you've got this like rap score in the background. So
I can see it.
Yeah, so I liked it. I mean, I like that part of it going at it this time. The problem with the very beginning when I saw this movie, the problem is then you meet the Italian mafia. And the Italian mafia is played in a whole different way. It's played for comedy. I mean, these are the weirdest mafioso that I've ever seen portrayed anywhere. Like, they are in a whole different movie.
Yeah, and one of the ways it's portrayed is anytime they're watching TV, there's always some sort of cartoon on. And like a really, really goofy cartoon. I think they're watching Itchy and Scratchy at some point, Heckle and Jekyll, like the Woody Woodpecker, those types of cartoons.
Felix,
yeah.
I think Betty Boop also. And the cartoons are all kind of giving you messages about what the movie's about too. So, I mean, I think that was actually really well done upon further review. But the mafioso guys, when you first meet them, Henry Silva, who plays the big boss, Vargo, he doesn't really say much. He just has Henry Silva's face, which is all you really need.
Right. I mean,
he's got a face that right there, he's the character, you're fine. He doesn't have to talk much. And at first I thought that the other guys, there was the guy, to his left, our right, that would be, the old guy, who just kept like repeating things and he was sort of comic relief. And then the underboss, I guess his associate, Sonny, who is totally for humor. I mean, he totally is over the top and sort of wacky. And then of course, Louis is also sort of pathetic and a little bit wacky. And at first I thought that Henry Silva was playing in a different movie until a point where he makes an elk call.
Right.
So the plot really is just all about Ghost Dog is a hitman. He works for the mafia. Louis is the person that gives him his assignments. So Louis tells him to kill a gangster named Handsome Frank, who is sleeping with the daughter of Vargo. So Ghost Dog kills the gangster, and then there's a girl in the room who lends him a book, and she lends him Rashomon. And then, because of that, because now he's killed the made man, it's time for the Sonny decides he needs to have him killed too.
Right, because the girl ends up being a witness. She wasn't supposed to be there. They're supposed to have scurried her out of town before that. But now, because she's a witness to the killing of a made man, they have to get rid of the person who killed them.
We got a really big problem here, Louis. Seems like you're directly responsible for it. What we need to do is eliminate the scumbag who whacked Frank. His killer needs to be neutralized.
In the words of the ancients,
matters of great concern should be treated lightly. Matters of small concern should be treated seriously.
Louis, now is the time to tell us everything you know about this mysterious weirdo.
Ghost Dog, power and quality.
Always see everything, your brother.
He calls himself Ghost Dog.
What?
Ghost Dog.
Ghost Dog?
He said Ghost Dog!
This, of course, causes conflict in Louis, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And so they decide they go after Ghost Dog, and they know he communicates by homing pigeon. So they just start sending these guys out to basically pigeon coops.
Yes, they're going to kill anyone who seems to match the description of a black dude who races pigeons on a rooftop.
And they're willing to stretch. And that's all played At first, I thought it was all played for laughs. Upon rewatching, and okay, let me just throw this at you just from the very beginning, because is the Italian mob in this movie, are they meant to be, are they played so slapsticky because they're meant to be, like, obsolete?
I never considered obsolete. They're definitely living in a different world than the rest of the characters, you know, Ghost Dog and the folks around the neighborhood. So it's hard to tell how relevant they are in Ghost Dog's world.
Because what I came up with after watching the entire movie was that they're treating Ghost Dog, who is clinging to this ancient art that's not really relevant to today's society now, and so are these mobster guys. They're also living a life that is not, you know, they're obsolete, passé, and it's sad.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. There are no young, there's no younger generation for the Italians in this movie. They're all old guys.
Oh, yeah. And actually, I didn't notice this at the time, but every time you go to a house of one of the mobster guys, there's a for sale sign in front of it.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah. But it makes complete sense because these guys are, yeah, they're irrelevant. They're vestigial. How about that?
Nice vocabulary pull right there.
Yeah. I'm trying. And what can you do? It's either that or dumb jokes. What, you know, so I'm trying to pick my poison.
Did you, during one of the neighborhood scenes, did you catch a brief appearance by, Marlo from The Wire?
I did not.
He was one of the, I think the Bloods. They're the ones in red, right?
Actually, I think it's opposite. I think the Bloods are in blue. I don't know. I'm not good with my, but it's
he was one of the guys in red. To acknowledge Ghost Dog when he was walking past.
Yeah, because they definitely made a point of both the Bloods and the Crips gave him respect, and he kind of stayed out of their way.
Yep, but yeah, it was interesting to see. There are a couple of interesting cameos. Marlo was fun to see. The other was, I'm probably going to butcher his name, Raza, the same dude who did the soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to be, again, I read it. I didn't recognize him, of course. But he was the guy in camo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he actually directed, or maybe wrote and directed, his own samurai movie last year. The Man with Iron Fists.
Oh, no. Is that the, of course I can't think of his name. Russell Crowe?
Yes.
And did you watch it?
I've seen it.
And?
It's nuts.
Is it any more nuts than this movie?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it was, it was crazy. I mean, you could tell he loves the old school, kung fu movies. You know, that have sort of the supernatural element to them. And does his best to recreate that, but it's definitely I don't know how he talked to some of the people he got into being in this movie.
Is it worth watching?
It's yeah. It's not a good movie, but I think it's worth experiencing.
Okay. I'll add that to my list of perhaps unpleasant experiences.
It's not pleasant. I mean, it's definitely like watch you. At least I got the feeling while I was watching it that this is definitely a first time filmmaker who probably hasn't figured out how to best edit himself. So there's just so much stuff in it.
Yeah, that actually.
It's not even that long. It's just barely over an hour and a half.
Now that I find that intriguing. Okay, so we're back to Ghost Dog here for a moment. So after a little bit of, again, lots of like slapstick sort of comedy involving rooftop rookeries? No, anyway, pigeon coops. Ghost Dog goes home and finds that all of his pigeons are killed. So He makes a decision because now he knows that he can't, even though Louis is possibly part of it, he can't kill Louis because that would be wrong since he is, you know, Louis is his shogun or whatever. He instead has to kill the entire movie.
Hadn't Louis already warned him that they were coming after him before he went back to go see his pigeons had been killed?
Oh, probably. And probably, actually, he told him that he was going to be killed, too, if they didn't kill Ghost Dog, right? Something like that?
Right.
They were both in trouble, so.
Mm-hmm.
In order to protect himself and his master, he must go after the mob. Then we meet, or maybe we've already met at this point, but then we have this strange relationship Ghost Dog has with the ice cream vendor. Tell me about that.
Yeah, there's the ice cream vendor and the little girl who he shares the book with. And say both times I watched the movie, I was certain that they were both going to be killed. But the ice cream vendor is pretty funny. He only speaks French, and Ghost Dog doesn't speak French. But they have for Ghost Dog the lengthiest conversations in the whole movie, and it's sort of a funny trick with the subtitles. They are often saying the exact same thing to each other. So it's a nice little running joke, but it's really the only relationship that grounds Ghost Dog to reality.
Well, exactly. And I mean, again, it brings me back to, you know, Ghost Dog is living in mostly this fantasy world he's created for himself.
Right.
And so are the mobsters. Because the mobsters don't have to do any of this. I mean, there's no real percent, except for the fact that there's that one witness. They were clinging on to, you know, the rules of the mafia, even though no one else took them as seriously as they took themselves.
Right.
What do you know about the director, Jim Jarmusch?
Not much. I think I've only seen one other movie that he's done, the one with Bill Murray, which I remember liking, but also remember thinking was really slow.
Well, I've seen Night on Earth, although it was a long time ago, and is it Down by Law that why have I not seen that movie? It's got Tom Waits and Roberto Benigni, who's also in Night on Earth, and
are they cops in that movie?
I don't know. They're in jail. But yeah, I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list. I have not seen it yet. But and then Night on Earth is a bunch of little vignettes that, like, there's a lot of language. Like, he does do that thing with language where people don't understand each other, and yet they don't speak the same language, and yet they understand each other because some things are universal. And I don't know. I mean, it's obviously it's on purpose to some extent, but I'm not exactly sure it's any more than just, I don't know. It means something to him, obviously. This is part of the human condition that people that don't even speak the same language still understand one another.
Yeah. There's one scene that the ice cream dude and Ghost Dog have together where he takes him up to a rooftop to see a Hispanic guy building a boat.
Yes.
On the top of a roof. And it was so bizarre, but that's sort of right in the middle of Ghost Dog's vendetta. He may have already even killed Margo at that point. Such a weird scene to pull you out of the violence. And I don't know what your reaction was to that scene, but I actually found it really peaceful.
Oh, I love the scene. I thought it was great. Yeah. Because it was just out of nowhere,
mm-hmm.
and it was totally absurdist. And yeah, I thought it was great. I thought that scene was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really sincere. They're kind of staring at him in wonder, and you know, they're not making fun of him at all. They're just wondering, you know, what he's doing and why he's doing it. And yeah, it was. Oh, such a great scene.
And it makes as much sense in this movie as anything else in this movie does.
Right. And I think that's why I think if you're not willing to let go of of the needing some sort of logical construct to pull you through, I don't think you would have a chance of enjoying this movie at all.
I wholeheartedly agree, because again, that's what happened to me the first time. Is I was all WTF and not saying, okay, let's just see where this guy is taking me. And maybe now that I'm more into watching a movie with that in mind, I enjoyed it a lot. I actually enjoyed this movie quite a bit. Even the goofy mafia stuff, I thought, was actually, you know, once I realized, okay, this is a whole thing. This is not by accident. This is on purpose. This is like a surreal movie.
Very much so. Like the Fargo's death scene was so bizarre. I had to watch it twice.
Well, explain.
The way he dies, it's so comical. He's such a serious character, you know, except for the elk call. But it's the goofiest death. You know, he gets shot and he does the movie thing where he talks very slowly after he got shot. But then essentially he just goes, bleh,
yeah,
with his tongue out and dies. It'd be like the worst kind of death scene you could imagine, like in a high school play.
Well, okay, here's the other thing that took me out of it when I first saw it, and then now it just made me laugh when I watched it again, was that when Ghost Dog, you know, he's practicing with his samurai swords, and he's, you know, he's living the way of the samurai, and again, that's all very important to him. When he draws his silenced pistol, which is, you know, very long because of that, he does all of these sword flourishes. Like, he holsters it with a flourish, he draws it with a flourish. I mean, this guy is deep in the woods of the samurai life.
It's almost like a nervous tick.
Yeah, you can imagine if he, if you ever saw him, like, eat with a fork and spoon, he would be doing the same sort of samurai flourishes there, too. But in this case, I think you only ever see him eating an ice cream cone.
Yeah, that was one single thing that, my pre-wife could not get over in the movie. She thought that was the dumbest thing she'd ever seen.
Well, exactly. That's why it took me out of it, too. I was like, No. And then when Sonny starts, Public Enemy, he's singing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what? And then the elk call. It's just, yeah.
He calls himself Ghost Dog. I don't know, a lot of these black guys today, these gangster type guys, they all got names like that they make up for themselves.
Is that true?
Sure. He means like the rappers. You know, the rappers, they all got names like that. Snoop Doggy Dogg, Ice Cube, Q-Tip, Method Man. My favorite was always Flavor Flav from Public Enemy. He got the funky fresh fly flavor. Live lyrics from the bank of reality. I kick the flies through maneuver technicality to a dope track. I love that guy.
I don't know anything about that. But it makes me think about Indians. You know, they got names like Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, Running Bear, Black Elk. Mm.
That kind of shit.
Yeah, Indians.
Black guys.
Same thing.
Yes. Sonny's deep, deep knowledge of hip-hop is hilarious.
Well, that's apparently a thing. I mean, I guess Jim Jarmusch found that some of the Italian gangsters actually did have a love of hip-hop. And so that's why he wove that part. Because he wrote this. That's why he put that in the story. But yeah, it's hilarious when he is, he's like shaving and singing along with the Public Enemy songs. And he was quoting Flava Flav and it's amazing.
Yeah, but the sword flourish with the gun, it reminded me of the Tick comic book. Did you ever read it?
I did not read the Tick comic book.
Well, but you remember the cartoon, right?
Oh, yeah.
I love the cartoon. I actually really like the original comic too, but the comic is much, much darker. Like the Tick is actually, he's in an escapee from, an asylum. So he's actually a crazy person. And, it's been so long. It's been about 20 years since I've read it. So I don't remember the exact plot, but one of the things that always stuck with me as being really subversively funny is there was a samurai character who was, tracking the Tick. And, thought the Tick was his mortal enemy. In the beginning, in one of the panels, he drew his samurai sword and it was probably 3 or 4 panels long, this really long, dramatic speech about, what it means to be a samurai and how he's on this singular mission to get the Tick for whatever reason. And once the sword is drawn, it must draw blood before it can be sheathed again. And there's this really funny panel when he realizes that he drew his sword. He's getting so worked up, but there's no one around. So the next panel is him putting on like a 7th Band-Aid on one of his fingers because he had to draw blood before he put it.
Yeah.
That sort of goofy sensibility that I was reminded of with all the gun flourishes when he was reholstering it.
And then there's the other unreality, although I think this is taken from another movie, but where he ends up killing Sonny with a bullet through the bathroom drain pipe.
So what part of that scene did you think was the least believable?
Definitely the drain pipe, although I had my question about the Flava Flav connection there.
See, the Flava Flav, that didn't bother me at all, because, you know, who knows what anybody does when they think they're alone in their bathroom. But what I found really just not believable is if you turn on your faucet and no water comes out, what do you do? Because I think it would be like on the second page of my list of things to do would be to look down the drain.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that makes no sense. Yeah, I think you have something there.
But, yeah, that's the only thing that really bothers me about that scene.
It's funny. I didn't even look at that. At that point, I was more interested in the dancing in the bathroom.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of sleight of hand. So you don't think about why he looked down the drain because there's no water coming out of the faucet.
Yeah. Well, in which case, it worked just fine. And then, okay. So at this point, is it through a sense of honor that Louis has to avenge his boss's death, or is it because the daughter ordered him to do so?
My read was that the daughter was the new boss and ordered Louis under threat of death to get rid of Ghost Dog.
Okay, so he has no choice.
Ghost Dog not only killed her lover in front of her, but also killed her father in front of her.
Yeah, well, okay, that makes sense then. So then you have the big confrontation that you've been waiting for, I suppose, in that...
You skipped over another
thing
that I thought was also really, really funny. It's when Louis and his buddy get pulled over when he's trying to get the buddy to the hospital because he's been shot by Ghost Dog.
Okay.
And the cop pulls him over, and it's a female cop. And because they need to get to the hospital or he's going to die, the guy shoots the cop. And then when they speed off, they have a really funny conversation about how Louis's a male chauvinist pig because he's upset because the guy shot a lady cop. And they have this really brief conversation about how that's really sexist to put it like that because Louis sees a lady cop, another dude just sees a cop. So the guy who shot her feels like he did her a favor by treating her like a guy. Because he's all about equality.
Again, it's a valid point. It is funny though. You're right. I mean, I'm never on board when you just shoot a cop in a movie, but you know,
understandable.
Yeah, one of those things. Yeah, I mean, it was well done. You know, the whole scene was again. It's again. You're taken along on this like surreal ride, And that's what I appreciated this, like I said, the second time and third times I watched it. So this 1967 movie, Branded to Kill.
Branded?
It's called Branded to Kill. And here's the little plot synopsis in IMDb. A hitman with the fetish for sniffing boiling rice fumbles his latest job, putting him into contact with his treacherous wife, with the mysterious woman eager for death, and with the phantom-like hitman known only as Number One. And there are at least two things taken out of this movie. Directed by Seijun Suzuki, who apparently is a famous Japanese director. But there's the bullet through the drain pipe was taken from Branded to Kill. And also the scene where the bird lands in front of Ghost Dog's rifle scope, also directly from the movie. So this is an homage.
Wasn't there also a cartoon that they were watching right before it happened where a character was shooting bullets through a pipe, and even though it had like some 90 degrees in it, the bullets came out like the shower head?
Oh, maybe. It's, yeah, because like I said, there were a lot of cartoon references that were very, very specific.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, boiling rice smells great.
I guess. You know, it's just one of those things, you know. It could be worse, though. You know, I'd rather have that than, like, there's, I guess, videos about something called cake farts.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I don't want to explain it. Just, it's,
please don't.
It's pretty much what you think.
Do you have a rice cooker?
I do, as a matter of fact.
Have you heard about making pancakes in a rice cooker?
I have not.
So if you put your pancake batter into your rice cooker, like
okay,
the whole batch, and just cook it in your rice cooker, it makes one giant, perfect pancake.
So how does that, I mean, does it crawl up the sides or something, or how does that, it's just a really thick pancake?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you sort of turn it out upside down, and it's all nice and brown, and I mean, depending on the shape of your rice cooker, it'll either look like a big disc or more like a dome.
Huh.
And it works. It works great. I've tried it.
And
it's
do
cool.
You
can cut the pieces like cake wedges and eat them that way.
So you can like load it up with things like blueberries or chocolate chips or whatever you want, and that way. Huh.
Yeah. I mean, you can actually mix everything right in your rice cooker, and then just cook it for about 45 minutes, and you end up with a giant pancake.
Do you just let the rice cooker go like it normally would, and it dings when it's done, or do you have to coddle it a little bit?
Well, we don't have a fancy one that has like a timer on it. We just have the kind that clicks off when the rice is done. So we had to keep cooking it.
Oh, okay.
Because it does take about 45 minutes.
Huh.
So if you have a fancier one,
I'll have to set it on black rice or something.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know how I'm going to incorporate this knowledge into my life, but I'm going to try.
Well, if you guys ever do like a pancake Sunday or Saturday or whatever, one time, instead of making a bunch of pancakes, you can just make one giant one and save a lot of dishes.
Conceivably, I could do this tomorrow morning. See, that's the thing. Like, with our schedules, we hardly ever eat together ever. We never have a Sunday breakfast we could have a Wednesday breakfast, I guess, theoretically. But Wednesday is so full of stuff to do that,
right.
Yeah, anyway. Someday we'll work regular hours and have weekends off.
Well, if your rice cooker has like a timer function.
Okay.
Like where you can program it to cook, you could actually load everything up the evening before and just...
I could load it up right after we're done talking.
Mm-hmm.
And wake up to the smell of one giant pancake.
Yeah, it's great.
Where did you discover this?
I follow a site called Life Hacker on Twitter.
Okay.
And they had a whole article about it.
Huh. Well, bizarre. Bizarre.
Mm-hmm. It's full of random bizarre stuff like that.
Let's see. So, back to Ghost Dog, because we need closure on this. Are we Well, we didn't really talk too much about the girl and Ghost Dog's interaction. I mean, basically, he, you know, she reads, so he encourages her reading and proves that he's read as well, and then ends up giving her Rashomon that he had, that Vargo's daughter had given him, and so he gives it to her. And then eventually, during this whole thing where he's killed everybody, but he knows Louis. Oh, I like the fact, by the way, that when he confronts Louis about the whole killing of the pigeons, he shoots him in the shoulder.
Right, because Louis says he can't go back without any... because Ghost Dog kills the other mobster who was going to kill Louis. And Louis tells him he can't just go back because they'll think that he was in on it. So Ghost Dog shoots him in the shoulder. And then later, when he runs into him again in Vargo's house when he's killing everyone else, he shoots him in the exact same place, in the shoulder.
Because he's not allowed to put too many holes in, you know, the person that he's the retainer for. So eventually, they have to have this meeting where it's Louis versus Ghost Dog in the street, a la High Noon, kind of. But right next to the ice cream vendor and the little girl who are there. And it pretty much...
Ghost Dog knows it's coming.
Oh, yeah. And it has to end this way. It can't end any other way.
Right.
Yeah. So we can just leave it at that. There's no reason to, you know, if anybody listening to this has not seen Ghost Dog and wants to have a surreal journey into a lot of silence from Forrest Whitaker, although well done silence, and a lot of wackiness from Italian mafioso, I recommend it.
Yeah, it's funny that the mafia hitman who believes himself to be a modern-day samurai is the realistic anchor of the movie.
Well, exactly.
Everyone else is goofy.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like I said, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, well, I'm intrigued by this idea that, you know, he's going to take this, you know, obviously he's taken it far too seriously, but he's going to take this into the real world. And this is not where he goes. And that's what shocked me before. And the thing about Rashomon is important because, as it turns out, Ghost Dog and Louis have much different memories of the circumstances in which they met, the whole how Louis saved his life. Ghost Dog believes that Louis did it, you know, out of the goodness of his heart, or to save a fellow man who was getting attacked by a couple other guys. But Louis remembers it as this piece of crap kid pointed a gun at him, so he shot him.
Very true.
So there's no real connection even there. He's just this guy that shows up later talking samurai, saying that you saved my life and now I'm here to, you know, whatever.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Vargo's daughter.
Yes.
Was the style just a product of that time in the 90s? Or do you think she was deliberately made to look like Natalie Portman from The Professional?
Well, I wondered about that too. Because I got some Natalie Portman, but I also got some, like, Rose McGowan. So I think I'm going to go with both.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to say both. I don't think it was a direct nod. Although, you know what? The hair is the same, looking at it.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'll be willing to bet it's a direct nod. What has she done? Trisha Vesey.
I didn't recognize her.
Yeah, I didn't recognize her either, but I'm looking her up now.
While you're looking her up, let me drop this bit of knowledge on you.
Okay.
This may sway you one way or the other. The movie, The Man with the Iron Fist, has a tagline on IMDb. And here it is. And this is going to push you one way or the other about whether you want to see the movie or not. The tagline is, "You can't spell Kung Fu without F and U."
Oh dear. Okay, well, okay, if it's that kind of movie, then I guess I'm in.
It's that kind of movie.
Yeah, if it's that kind of movie, I'm good to go. See, had I known this was this kind of movie, I probably would have enjoyed it from the beginning, but I was not prepared for this the first time. So, but I, you know what? I give it a recommend, though. I totally recommend people see Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. I think I was probably also a little put off by the colons, because I was in my anti-colon period. Like, I made fun of Homicide: Life on the Streets so hard when it came out. And then, of course, Law & Order SVU and all those other shows that had colons in them. So I think I was just prejudiced against colons. As I've grown older, though, I've found that, you know, like most things...
I'm going to try and connect this thread. You were prejudiced against colons, but you watched this movie with our mother.
Okay, well, that's, yeah, it's you, yeah, that's a very, very skillful weaving of the thread.
Yeah, maybe two people will get that.
Yeah, that's okay. It's hysterical, though. You were a funny, funny man. Actually, you said probably the funniest thing I've heard all year long, and it had to do with the death of our great Aunt Reva and our grandmother's reaction to it. This is something you told our mother.
Oh, right. Yes.
Can you repeat it?
It was, I won't remember the exact wording, but it was something like, at least our grandmother had a few peaceful months before Reva decided she was going to join her and anoint her for eternity.
Which I thought was absolutely hilarious. And in the retelling, it may not be as funny to the casual listener, but they died 6 months apart, almost to the day.
And in a weird quirk of the timing of everything, we ended up having grandma's memorial service / celebration of life 6 months later. It happened to coincide with to be just about exactly a week before the death of her sister.
Oh yeah, and that was the same. Was the reason why I had to throw the contact episode in, even though it was sort of in the can for when we needed it. The reason we needed it is because the day before Reva died, my wife's grandfather died, and she had to leave for parts south for that funeral. So I was a single dad for a couple days, which I realize you've probably done more of that because you guys travel more for your work. But luckily it worked out day-wise because I only worked one of those days. But I don't recommend it. Single parents out there, yeah, you guys do a lot of work. A lot of juggling.
You know what's a nightmare? It's having two of them.
That's what I hear.
They just tune each other up.
Yeah, every time...
It's not a one-to-one. It's not just adding another thing to deal with. It's like exponential growth of headache.
Oh, that's hilarious. And can they occupy each other, though? That's the only issue we have, is that...
maybe when they're older they can, but right now, they just escalate each other.
Oh. Awesome. The best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, because right now we're dealing with, can you go out on the porch and blow bubbles to me? I'm like, oh, I've got this stuff to do. I'm like, well, but I'm all alone outside. I go... Well, could you come in then so the neighbors don't see? Anyway. What can you do? So, any other thoughts on Ghost Dog?
They're so needy.
Darn kids.
Yeah, Ghost Dog, I really enjoyed rewatching it. It was, like I said, it wasn't quite the movie I remembered. But if you enter it with an open mind, and maybe a cigar, too. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Outstanding. Any final thoughts?
Passenger pigeons. They've been extinct since 1914.
Until next week, or next time, this is Eric and Drew, Not in a Creepy Way.
You've been listening to Not in a Creepy Way. If you have a rant or rave, please send your email to rants@notincreepyway.com.
Like us on Facebook. Give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave a comment. Turns out you can leave a 5-star rating and the comment could say your show sucks, and it still makes us happy.
Not in a Creepy Way.